Chapter 28 Running. There were no days or nights in that place. When he was tired, he would sleep. When he was hungry, the room sent food. When he was restless, he paced. The door would not open for him. He tried it many times, but the result was always the same. The room withheld him. Udo divided his time between waking and sleeping with speaking. He'd greet the room and speak with it for a while, but the conversation was rarely good. Sometimes he would ask it about the diaspora's nature, but there was little to learn outside of what he already knew. He tried rephrasing his questions, tried approaching blind spots from different directions to see if he could glean just one shred of new information, but the barrier was always the same.
I'm sorry, Udo. My Intellinet link is disabled. I cannot retrieve the information you've requested.
The room had a simple intelligence, almost childlike, though its command of language seemed quite mature. Eventually, Udo learned that the only thing the room was really qualified to discuss were matters pertaining to the room. Subjects falling beyond that scope might as well have been forgotten legends. He felt lost in some way. It was as if all of existence beyond his door had been erased. The only world left to him was a cell. Irpisha came to see him sometimes, though without days and nights to break up the time, he had no idea if she visited frequently. He thought it might have been possible to keep time based on the frequency of his meals, but even this felt insubstantial. There were times in which he was certain he'd gone at least a day and maybe more without taking any nutrition at all, only water to ease his voice over long bouts of speaking. In others, he couldn't get enough food to satisfy himself. He'd ask for 3, and in some cases even 4 servings, one right after the other. Early on, Udo had tried to step through the door when the tray arrived. It snapped shut so quickly that he rebounded from its surface. He staggered backward, clutching his nose, then teetered, then floated gently down to the couch, cursing. He screamed at the room and demanded to be let out. He was sick of staring at the same walls, and couldn't the goddamned room understand that he just needed to see something new for a change? Something other than just the goddamned room? The room's answer was always the same.
I am not permitted to allow your exit. Please do not take this personally, Master Udo. If I had hands, the situation would be entirely out of them.
Future rations of food and water were delivered through a small hole that opened at the center of the door, something large enough for him to squeeze his head through and nothing more. Then he tried disobedience, but the room prodded for more of his story, always. When Udo spoke, all was silent. The walls themselves strained to absorb every word. When he did not speak, the room waited. When he went for too long without speaking, the room prodded.
What next? It would ask.
If he refused to answer, it would continue to ask.
Udo? Udo, what next?
Then it would wait. Perhaps a few minutes, perhaps an hour. He never really knew for sure, as time in that place was meaningless, but he was certain the interval was always different.
Udo? Udo, you were just saying you'd come to a small village. There was a woman there, probably the wife of their chieftain. She stood you off with a club, and all you'd really wanted were clothes for the giant. What next? What happened after that, Udo? Tell me. What did you next say to her?
He began to hate that word, next. It was dropped upon his shoulders like a mallet, like a maul. Next. It came crashing upon him just as he retrieved his breath. Next. When he arrived at a hurtful memory. Next. When he'd gotten through a hurtful memory and wished only for a moment's respite. Next. It was the first thing he heard upon waking and the last thing he heard before sleep took him. Next. He heard it chasing him in his dreams. Next. The word lost all meaning, he heard it so many times. It was a strange and senseless sound. Next. It got so that his tongue parched instantly whenever he heard it. Next.
What next, Udo? She gave him a bejeweled dagger. What did he do with it? What did you do with it? Where did you go next?
He'd take it out at night sometimes, Udo answered, eyes unfocused, mind unfocused.
The walls around him sometimes disappeared when he heard that word, next. He thought he could see the hills and the forests again. He felt the old rags upon his body, and later, the fine costumes. Felt the road beneath his feet, felt the warmth of the donkey at his side, felt the ghosts of friends he once knew.
He'd turn it in the firelight. The rubies dazzled him, and he would just stare at it for hours, and I didn't like it.
What next, Udo? You didn't like him looking at the dagger?
Udo blinked. He must have fallen silent again for the room to have made that noise. That was all it was now, a noise. The word had dissolved somehow as he was being slowly dissolved. It was no longer an idea that meant the thing that follows. Now it was a spur that goaded and burned.
Udo, what did you—
Things started happening quickly. Once I understood the lay and how it ought to be presented, we built a good rhythm, city to town. It led us zigzagging all across the Odiscus.
The room fell silent. It liked to let him do the talking. He spent much of his time pacing the small distance from door to bed, his mouth rattling out an unending stream of words. Eating became an imposition. The need to breathe interrupted the flow of words, and he had to strain to avoid infuriation. The only thing he did not begrudge was water. Water was essential. Water kept things moving smoothly. Water brought the words from him, and so water was good. He spoke on. He spoke long enough that he learned to forget the sound of next, and that seemed all right. Sleep came less and less as unknowable time wore on. He would lie in bed trying to find it, wide-eyed. His body became very loud in these times, every itch magnified to an assault. His eyes dried to sand within their sockets. He lay there panting and miserable, wanting to speak more and knowing he should not. It hurt too much to speak. It hurt too much even to swallow. His body reeked of grease and he couldn't stand his own clothes anymore. He got out of bed and stripped naked. The room recognized what he wanted and without comment obliged. The entire chamber hummed with violet light, tingling his skin as it bathed his body. There was an acrid, dusty, burning smell, and then the violet light was gone. He held his hand up and watched as the skin's top layer cracked, then flaked, then lifted. It broke away in little scales and drifted on invisible currents, lifting, lifting, until it found the cracks between wall and ceiling and disappeared. He scoured himself with his hands and fingernails, creating for a while a tiny disaster at the chamber's center, a spinning devil of white, flaky dust that spiraled upward, spread, and disappeared into the cracks where the walls met the ceiling.
You cannot sleep?
I tried, Udo said. It won't come.
He looked at his hand again, now freshly pink. It blurred and trembled.
I'm not here right now, he muttered.
Where are you?
I don't know. I don't know, but I'm not here. I don't know what I am.
Perhaps you are only exhausted.
I can't sleep. I've tried. It won't come.
Perhaps.
Yes?
Perhaps you'd like to speak a little further? Perhaps it will make you tired and then you'll be able to sleep.
How long have we been here?
Myself? Forever. In your case, I regret I cannot give an accurate reading. These quarters are not equipped with a chronometer. All timekeeping is centralized.
Yes, Udo whispered.
Speak further, Udo. Speak on. I think you'll be able to sleep when it is all out of you.
Perhaps.
She bore a tray of food the last time she came to see him in that place. Not the mash upon which he'd been living, real food. Tender cut of pork loin, smoked salmon, peas, a wedge of fine cheese, butter, and soft bread still warm to the touch. She set this on the table beside the forgotten stack of paper and said,
"The time is near."
He hung his head and sighed.
"I'm not finished."
It doesn't matter. Do not be afraid. You will have further opportunity to complete this work after the first merging.
Oh, yes, he whispered.
His eyes were unfocused and drifting.
The subject doesn't disappear until the second.
You will not disappear, she said.
So you insist.
You see? Did I not say you would learn to doubt?
I feel as though I'm disappearing already.
She nodded. It is normal. You will recover.
I'm not certain I wish to recover.
What do you mean? She asked.
It might be nice to disappear. It might be nice to not be.
You don't mean that. Here, have a bite of this. You'll feel better. She waved a fork topped with steaming, dripping meat beneath his nose.
His eyes widened instantly. When he bit down, he chipped a tooth and didn't notice. He simply chewed and swallowed, enamel and all. The sharp edge scraped the lining of his throat on the way down. Then he was bent double over the plate, shoveling it all in as he'd once shoveled the skin from Erda's bones. Irpisha waited silently for him to finish. Only when he'd finished would she speak again.
How do you feel now?
He looked around the chamber as if seeing it for the first time.
Yes, I feel... What happened to me? Where was I?
You've been here the entire time.
I don't feel like I was. It feels like I was gone or watching someone else.
It's normal. All of this is quite normal, she assured him.
All right.
I need you to listen very carefully to me now.
Yes?
She settled into the couch. He realized she wore the melam. She'd always worn it, in fact. He'd never seen her in anything else. He looked at his own clothes, the strange material. He'd never seen garments so smooth or so well made. There was no stitching anywhere to be seen. They fit him effortlessly.
When you go before his throne, you will feel alone. This is not true. I will be with you.
You'll be able to come with me?
Not in any way you'll be able to see, she said.
Failing to understand, he shook his head at her. Her arm spanned the distance between them, and he felt her finger touch upon his temple.
In here, as there is a fraction of On partitioned within me, so there is a fraction of me partitioned within you.
When? How have you done this?
She offered a slow smile.
Please, I'm a god.
Right.
Now listen carefully. This is very important. When you visit him, the entirety of your soul will be laid bare. You're going to feel this happen. It can be unsettling if you're unprepared. In fact, even when you're prepared, I understand, it is still rather uncomfortable.
You understand?
She shrugged.
I've never been in your position.
You've never merged with him? I thought you were only an aspect.
I mean, I've never been human, Udo. Your kind has a violent sense of self, this sense of individuality. Most of you would sooner die than see it violated. We frankly don't understand it, but we do understand that it is there. It's the most powerful instinct you possess. The self is unique. The self is sacred. The self must continue on. Even when it can't continue on, you take steps to see that it will. You erect statues of yourselves. You construct monuments to your legacy. You strain for your names to be penned in as many books as you can manage, on the simple hope that some stranger might read it decades or centuries after your death. As if that stranger could be anyone to you. As if those books will not one day simply crumble to dust. You're here for such a short time, you feel the shortness of it. As you age, you feel it slipping away faster. And if your life is comfortable, you'll have time to panic and begin looking for ways to steal back some of that time you're losing. Who will remember me after I'm gone? Who will know my name when I'm no longer here to wear it?
Those are the concerns of men greater than me.
She rested a hand upon his knee and said,
No, Udo. All humans. They're perfectly natural thoughts for such a short-lived species. We think about you often. We wonder about the time your people grew smart enough to realize your own identity as living beings.
The instant one of you looked at one of your expired comrades, perhaps it was sickness, or perhaps it was some animal. One of your kind must have looked at the deceased and realized that he or she would one day end in the same fashion. If there was any point in all the history of human development that could have tied to Eve's eating the fruit of knowledge, I think it must have been when you finally realized you would die.
Who is Eve?
A legend from a people even more ancient than the gods.
Udo blinked and hung his head. He felt dizzy.
I'm sorry. It is very hard to follow the things you say.
I know. It's because I'm not speaking to the Udo of now. I'm speaking to the Udo that will soon be. You'll remember this conversation later. It will take on new meaning for you once you've gained a little perspective.
He looked at her with steady, unblinking eyes.
Then what would you say to me right now? I'm weary of not understanding you. Give me something to help right now.
She nodded. So, that is a brave question to ask. I approve and applaud you. When you go before him, you will feel as though you're being dissolved. You feel a great blackness coming upon you. There may be lights, a few or many. Do not fear when this happens. If you fear, you'll lose control, and then he may see you. Try to remember that you're not the first person this has happened to. Others have endured this, and you will come out alive on the other side.
What do you mean that he might see me?
I'm sorry, I can't tell you that now. If you know it going in, he'll definitely see it, and then you will have lost. When you're with him, you will understand. Right now, all I'll say is that I've embedded something within you to preserve your mind. I can't tell you its nature nor describe its function, or An will know how to find it. You must not think about it, Udo. Do you understand? You must think about anything except that one little thing hiding far away inside you. If An discovers it, you'll be discarded.
Discarded?
Rendered down to jelly and bone meal and flushed down a chute.
He placed a hand against his chest. His heart was pounding.
I don't think I can do this.
You can. You have to, so you can. I'll be with you. It is time. Is there anything you would ask?
Her question was like a magical phrase that emptied his mind. He felt as though he should have 1,000 questions, even felt as though they were in there somewhere. He could not find them. He could think of no way to give them voice.
Nothing, she prodded. Nothing at all.
Udo shook his head, paused, then looked at her suddenly.
Yes, in hell. Who was that with me?
She smiled.
You mean Geffen?
Udo nodded slowly. I thought for a while that it was Hanman. I mean, goddammit, you know what I mean. But I'm not so sure it was him. The person I was with did not seem to be in any great rush. Sometimes it seemed like we were strolling through the underworld. He'd let me stop and look at things, ask questions and so forth. Later I could tell he was prodding me in certain directions and I became convinced it was Hanman again, back to his old tricks. But I don't know. I always got the sense from him that he didn't care about the satisfaction of my own curiosity. The person I was with was patient while Hanman was always bustling. Everyone around him had to keep up. I'm probably not making any sense.
You're doing fine, she said. What you're trying to say is that you did not feel threatened by this person as you did with Hanman.
Yes, I suppose.
And so you should not have. It was not Hanman.
Who was it?
She only looked at him.
You?
He asked. She smiled.
It was you?
She shrugged.
Why?
Now she looked away from him. She seemed to wrestle with some decision, shrugged, and said,
Because you love me. There were things I needed you to see in that place, Udo, and you never would have seen them if you'd been there with me. Your eyes would have taken things in, yes, and your mind would have recorded the events, but you would not have seen. There would have been no discovery. You needed a guide you could trust but still question, not one you adored. Then later, when Geffen lost your trust, there was no reason for him to remain. It was time for Irpisha to come find you.
And now? Are you Irpisha now?
She nodded.
How do I know? How do I know you're not some other god wearing her body?
You don't. You must make a leap of faith to trust me now.
You were leading me in hell. You wanted me to see those tanks, the people in those tanks. Why?
Context.
Context? That's why I was taken to Mathis? You know what happened. You've seen inside me. Why would you do this?
Oh, the answer to that is simple, she said. She leaned back and spread her arms across the top of the backrest. She looked incredibly regal, and for once, Udo did not care. I wanted to see what you would do.
What I would do?
And you spared him.
I did not.
You spared him a further eternity in hell.
Udo shut his mouth and looked away.
Why did you leave the giants? She asked. You were happy with them. There was no history between you and them. You were free to leave Udo behind. What happened? They ran you off?
No, he scoffed. They were very good to me. They were too good to me.
Then why?
He said nothing.
Udo, why did...
They were killers.
The giants were.
He nodded. He was looking down at the leather thong upon his wrist, twisting it around with the fingers of the opposing hand.
They were wanderers, not nomadic so much. They ranged out over the territory. They'd go for days, weeks even. You can't believe how much ground they'll cover when they really get moving. And they were stronger than any other creature I'd ever seen, in that world or any other. I think maybe a bear might be stronger than a giant if it was fully grown and in a bad mood. But Talom never seemed like the right kind of a place for bears. Their world is hot and wet. Trees like nothing you've ever seen before. Trees so thick that the animals had learned how to live high up in their leaves. The women stayed home for the most part. They had a village out in the open, on the plains where the grass grows as high and higher than a normal man's head, and the Teoger, who hides within it, stalks their young. They built it by a strong source of good fresh water a day's march from the forest boundary and beat the grasses flat all around so that the world could not sneak up on them. But the women stayed home and taught the children while the men ranged out hunting. For days or weeks, they would be just gone, and life carried on. Those in the village did chores together, gave and took goods freely, told each other stories, argued, laughed. They didn't keep or trade money outside of jewelry. Beads, necklaces, bracelets, the men and women both wore them, and I saw them trade these items back and forth among each other many times. But I never saw them give such trinkets for anything other than more trinkets, never for food or drink or other things. After enough time, the men would return all burdened with dripping meat that had been quartered and wrapped on the trail. Lashed and hanging from poles or dragged along on a sled, they would bring this food back to the village, build a great fire, cook it all at once, and leave nothing to the bone. Their appetites were as enormous as their size, and I sometimes found myself wondering how any world, even one as large as Talom, could support them. But it seemed they were not that many. The tribe I came to live with had been the only people I'd seen since arriving there. I think they must have been curious about me. I looked very much like them, albeit of smaller stature. I remember the first time I saw them. I've often tried to imagine what they must have thought when they discovered me. A man less than half their size emerging from his grass hut and rags to see if he can go pull some fish from the river. They sometimes told each other stories of smaller folk who lived inside the trees and hoarded precious stones, the finest for their jewelry. Mischievous little creatures who darted quickly and delighted in trickery. They reminded me of our Disir. They must have thought I was one of these creatures, based on the way they first treated me. It used to make me laugh. It was much the same when I brought Riza to our village that first time. How they all reacted to him at the Croft Krieg. a godly being stepped out of our own legends. Living in the world of giants, I was so treated. I saw them standing in the distance watching me. I watched them a while, too. I thought they were normal people at first. It wasn't until they left and I followed that I realized. When they went back into the tall grass and stood head and body above it. I myself got fully lost in the stuff most times. That was when I realized at least some of our stories had been true. There was a world of giants adjacent to our own. Some of them must have found their way across to Erda long ago. Or one of ours wandered into their world and then found the way back. It could have happened that way. It had happened for me, at least. It could have happened to someone else. I followed after them for a few days. It wasn't hard. They traveled openly across the plain as though they feared nothing, as I suppose they must have, and took no trouble to hide their passage. Their legs covered much ground, as I've said, and soon they'd gotten far enough ahead of me that I could no longer see them. But the path they'd beaten through the grass was no temporary thing. The shoots were broken over and quickly yellowing. It was like the only mark they were capable of leaving was the permanent kind. Their very passage scarred the landscape. It was a truth they seemed to understand as early as birth, their impact upon the world. I think it's the reason they always moved in single file when they ranged out, like they wanted to minimize what they were doing to the land. That, or they simply wished to obscure their numbers. There came a point where their trail cut across the shallows of a river. I could see where it picked up again on the far bank. The water wasn't bad, swift-moving perhaps, but only as high as my knees in most places. When I reached the far bank, they were all there waiting for me. I was startled quite badly. One moment it was only me in the grasses, and in the next I was surrounded by giants, still as stone and twice as silent. I waved and tried to speak with them, but of course we couldn't understand each other. Their language was strange. It rolled and lilted like a whisper falling from soft lips. It flowed from them in laughter. Their voices were the deep sounds of water playing over the rocks in the riverbed. For a while, we sat together in the dirt and drew pictures to each other. With a stick, I drew a picture of a man and pointed to myself. They were confused at first, but with a bit of mummery, soon understood my intent and became excited. Next to the picture of the man, I drew a long flowing line for my river and a dome for my hut, and spent quite a bit more time trying to explain to them what these new symbols were intended to mean. Then their leader, Harriman, held out his hand for the stick and I gave it to him. He drew several more domes next to the first one I'd marked, and then added more people beside the river. He spoke continuously as he did this, gesturing in wide arcs above his head with his free hand all the while. Sitting in his shadow, I thought he looked like an oak tree leaning under a strong wind. When he was done, he put the stick aside and nodded at me. Almost on instinct, I nodded back. I mean, that's just what you do, isn't it? Someone nods at you, you nod back. Later, when they'd surrounded me and took me back to their village, I realized he must have been asking me a question, or at least warning me of his intentions. So I lived with them for a while. I learned to live with them. I wasn't a prisoner so much. They didn't keep me in a cage or tie me down. They even gave me a house. I'd become something of a pet, I think, given free range of the village and the surrounding territory, but if I wandered too far, there were always one or two of them to stop me and bring me back. They were gentle, soft of touch. Sometimes I wondered if they thought I was a child. Either way, pretty soon it became clear that I wouldn't be going anywhere, at least not in the short term. So I started looking for things to occupy my day. I moved among them, observed their daily work, and eventually took some of that work up for myself. When I did, they spoke with me more often. I began to learn a small selection of their words. I learned their words for no and yes and good and many others and spoke to them as well as I could. And I realized that to them, I really was something very much like a child. I was a man completely ignorant on the subject of how to be a man, as far as they could tell. So they took it upon themselves to begin teaching me the ways to be a man in their world. And of course, the only way they knew to do this was to start at the beginning. They instructed me as one of their own children, and I didn't mind it at all. I felt like a child among them, and I did not mind. It was good for a while. Living among them was good.
And then? She asked.
And then I ran away.
Why?
Udo sighed.
Hunting was not all the men did when they ranged out.
Ah, they raided another village, didn't they?
And took me with them.
You saw their violence.
He nodded. In their village, it's the women who rule. The men go out and do the things they do in the world, but in the village, life moves according to the demands of the mother. The entire clan has a mother, the wisest among them. Ours was named Aisling. She was very wise. Even the strongest of our men bowed to her. And these same men who bowed to Aisling and addressed her in the kindest of manner, slaughtered at the other village the men and the women and their children equally, and piled them all together in the center of the forest and put them to fire. Then, as the bodies rendered down, they danced around the fire and chanted to their gods.
And you fled.
He nodded again. You asked why.
Indeed, why?
What would make a man like me run away from the only group of people who had accepted him completely without reservation, without any knowledge of his past, present, or future, as a person, important to them only because all persons in their clan were important, from the oldest crone down to the newest babe? I'll tell you. It's the same thing that would cause that man to flee the world of his birth, the only world he ever understood.
He looked at her. She'd covered her mouth with her hand, and her eyes were likewise closed. She drew breath, a sharp gasp, and returned his gaze.
And now it is time for you to tell me, he said. Why was I taken to those tanks? Why did you lead me to Nix and Dittmar and Mathis?
They were a series of tests designed to expose the person you had grown into, and nothing more. I wanted to discover what you have learned since the time of your resurrection.
Then you weren't watching?
I was. Oh, I swear I was. I stayed out of your mind. The brush of a god's hand can level a city, Udo. Try to understand. When we look inside you, we leave a mark. Without malice or intent, we leave a mark.
Just as On will soon leave his mark.
She looked away. Udo looked down at the leather bracelet he'd been fingering. He said the name of the child who had given it to him, removed it, and placed it on the table by the stack of unused paper. Yerpisha stood from the couch and produced a black sphere no larger than the end of her thumb. She placed it on the table within the enclosure of the bracelet.
I'll be waiting in the hall, she said, and left.